Okay. Thanks, Rosie. Thanks very much for the introduction. Can you all hear me? Yeah, I don't want to speak too loud, but if you can hear me, then that's great. It really is absolutely wonderful to be back in Cork. Unfortunately, it has to be remotely. My spirit is upstairs in the room, enjoying, thank you, likewise, enjoying the poetry and the whiskey. So I'm going to be reading some poems from my new collection, the collection that will be launched. It'll be launched in exactly a month, in a month's time, on the 12th of November. I can arrange links and send those to you if you want to attend that particular launch, or whatever. And then I'll also be reading some new, some new poems. I can try if I can share the screen. No, okay, never mind. I was going to show you the cover, but that doesn't. That's neither here nor there. The most important thing is I'm going to read these poems. So the interesting thing is, I've never read these poems anywhere. And actually, for me, it's quite special that I can share them the very, very first time with my friends in Ireland. And I mean that very seriously. So the collection is essentially poems that were written, most of the poems were written from the middle of 2016 until probably the end of last year. Up until that time, previous to 2016, I had been living in Pietermaritzburg in KwaZulu-Natal. I'd lived in that city my whole life. And then 4 years ago, my wife and I decided to make the change, and we've moved down to the Cape. We live in a small village in the Cape that is actually, the village is at the foot of a mountain. I've never lived beneath a mountain in my entire life before. I've visited mountains, but I've never known what it's like to live beneath a mountain. The mountain is called Kasteelberg, which is an Afrikaans term, which means castle mountain. So I live at the base of Castle Mountain. Okay, so can everyone still hear? Is everyone fine? All good. Okay, great. The first poem is called New House. There is no mountain at the front of the new house. There are only birds and thin fever trees. There are only small stones and the shouts of children. At the back of the new house is where the mountain lives. The mountain with its hard, high forehead. The mountain with its infinite number of steps into the clouds. At the back of the new house, there is the mountain and small plants that survive only on air, and yellow fish that change behind the curtain of the wind. The next poem is called Blue Door. Many of these poems, I think, in my own, the way I think of them is they're not stories. They're not telling a story. They're not narrative. They're very abstract marks. They are gestures in a certain sense, abstract gestures that try to leave some kind of echo. So don't look for story. Don't listen for story. Listen for hooks, rather, like a barbed wire fence. You're trying to struggle through the barbed wire fence, and as you reach through the fence, it hooks onto your jumper. Even better still, if it hooks onto your skin. Okay, blue door. All is still. Sky bangs a blue door in the face of burning rock. Barely birds move. Small high stones through air dry as sunlight. I'm shadow, sheltered in the stoop of a small tree. I'm salt that tastes of seeing. Old bone cracked beneath the weight of insects. I should say, if at any point I'm reading too fast and you didn't get the poem or you couldn't hear it, just stop and I will gladly read the poem again. This poem is called He Does Not Know. It's a kind of mantra, actually, for me. He does not know. He does not know what he is doing or why he is doing it. Why it is so early where he is and so late where he is not. Why the sky where he is so big and so limited at the same time. Why there are so many mountains, or why there are any mountains at all. He does not know the answer to any of the questions anymore. He's no longer able to think of even the simplest things. Where to pay for water, for example, or how to buy time. This is a poem called I Carry a Geography. It's a poem a few years ago. I spent two months in Calgary, in Canada. And this is a poem, this is a love poem I wrote. I carry a geography for Julia. I carry a geography of the dark with me across oceans, frozen lakes, mountains whiter than ice, where wind contours a need urgent as flesh. This dark I know that does not ever, even in the glare of dreaming, leave me. This recognition, familiar and strange as any echo, returning white across a frozen sea. This dark is you. As long as you, like the dark, carry absence in the shape I carry with me. Everywhere. The geography of a heart in two halves. Okay. This poem is called The Dripping. There is a dripping in my head. Mother says she was always the largest girl in her class at school. A flock of sacred ibises erupt from a tree. The neighbor hoots for his wife to come and open the motor gate for him. Someone has turned off the water at the mains in the street again. Mother says the only thing she ever won at school was the St. John's ambulance badge for best bandage technique. The wind has died down, and the fires on the hillside at last are out. I can see the thin blue sky again. There is a dripping in my head. Mother left school in Standard 5 to work in her parents' fish and chip shop at the end of West Beach in Prince Alfred. Those are not clouds anymore. Those are no longer trees. Someone has pulled out the plug from the bottom of the ocean, and I am being sucked into the current. Mother says she was an only child, and both her parents were adopted. My pockets are filling up with syringes and with sand. My pockets are filling up with surgical masks. I have to write something, anything, anything, so just so as not to hear the dripping in my head. These are some really weird poems. There's some really weird shit going on here. And as I go on, it's going to get more weird. I might have to stop. No, well, I will stop, but before then. This is called Wall. The wind comes in the night when everybody is asleep and builds a wall between the sky and gravity. When we wake and walk in the forest of tall gum trees, smelling the eucalyptus and the wet earth, we do not notice how much the sound of leaves is like bricks being tossed up to the second story where the loud light lives. Yeah. This is unfortunately not a particularly nice poem to read. Unfortunately, there's a scourge of gender-based violence and child abuse that is rampant, particularly here in this province, in the Western Cape. The various socio-economic reasons. This is called Little Girl. Her grandmother sits on the green plastic chair with the broken back. Her mother sits on an upturned black label beer crate. Her sister sits and sleeps on her mother's lap. Her auntie, on her mother's side, sits on the stump used for chopping wood and for chopping off the heads of chickens. Her mother's disabled cousin sits in her wheelchair, the one with the stupid front wheel. Her father hasn't been seen for 3 years since he left to find work on the citrus farms near Clan William. She sits on the bare earth with her legs crossed and her blue school skirt tucked tight beneath her legs in case her father should ever come back. Okay. Who? Who is the one who opens and closes the heavy gate so that the fully laden truck can drive through and out the other side? Who is this person whose job it is to step out into the heat barefoot, to grasp the hot metal of the gate and heave it open and then close it again? Who is this person? Tell me. Is it the one who sits in the back? Is it the one who always sits behind? The one who always has to peer between the shoulders of everyone else in order to see the world? Rosie, I've completely lost track of time. I meant to start timing myself and I didn't. So just...
There's absolutely no stress or pressure on time, Kubus. I think everybody would love you to read for longer. I know I would. And seeing as Yuyutsu isn't with us, that means you have free rein to go as overtime as you like.
Thank you. I have a few, yeah, just a few more. Thanks. So the poems I read then were poems that will be in this new collection coming out in a month's time. But I can't sit still. Well, I sit still too long. So I have to keep writing. So here's some pieces that are, I'll probably say still in transition, yeah, okay. They're still coming into space, I think. But there's enough of them here that I think can warrant a reading, that I think they're strong enough to be able to stand by themselves. So I'll try a few of them. Wind again. The wind again is turning all of the trees inside out. Same wind that is slamming every door shut behind me. I can no longer use my arms to walk or even roll. And yet the steadfast mountain persists in its slowness. And it's the same illustrated sky as before and still. Drilling down deeper, now the only direction to go. I want to just repeat that last stanza just for myself, basically. Drilling down deeper, now the only direction to go. Drilling down deeper now, the only direction to go. Okay. Here's a goodie. It's called Animal. I am an animal made of hands and of mouth. I pant all over. I am sticky and I stink with stickiness. I lick everything, even the light that tastes of wet and hungry. Sometimes one ends up laughing at one's own stuff. It's nice. It's rare, but one does. I laugh at that one. This is called facial recognition. I should laugh at this, but I know I'm not going to. Every day, it's a prose poem, so it comes in prose shape. Every day he feels himself to be a different person. Just yesterday, the last day of the old year, he went to the bathroom in the seaside hotel where he and his wife were having lunch. He had already had 3 glasses of sweet white wine, and he looked at himself in the bright bathroom mirror that ran the length of the one wall. And he thought himself old and fat and ugly. This morning he walked past the image of himself in the window of the small town butcher shop. He was not the same person as yesterday. He was not younger or thinner or more handsome, of course. But there was something different about him. Was it the flies crawling across his lip and his shaved head? Was it the crows cawing inside his ears, the empty pages flapping behind his eyes? And now, at this moment, now he looks at his stiff and creaking hands, and he does not recognize them. They look like a rusted farm implement tossed into the felt behind a shed, a strange implement for separating skin from flesh. I have 2 more, and then we'll call it a night. This is called his grandfather's toolbox. Does a heart beat here inside? The man asked, and he banged the old wooden box, the box that his grandfather stored his old tools in, the tools to repair his old orthopedic boots. And if there is a heart here, he asked, as he counted the loud feet of the pedestrians and counted the loud feet of the old oak tree, as he banged the old wooden box of his rib cage, then can I trust my blood still? Can I trust my old hands to keep the lid shut so that nothing leaks out? The last poem is called Final Story. And the final story is about the man who could neither bend his back nor turn his neck. The man who could not stop leaking cerebrospinal fluid from every orifice of his body. The man who could not take a step without wading through the sticky, thick liquid his body was neither able to keep in nor to stop producing. The man at last, whose only movements left to him were those of his wide open eyes and his black tongue. Thank you. Sure. Thank you very much. Thank you.